Greetings and a warm welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in the middle of a nine-nation Middle East tour. He is blaming Iran and Obama for the ills in this part of the world. Now, his tour is thought to try and assure Persian Gulf Arab states that a pullout of American troops from Syria does not mean Washington is abandoning the region. He'll also be promoting what is called as an Arab NATO to bring the region together in a military alliance to stand against Iran. Pompeo has also asserted that pressure will continue on Tehran. Let's discuss those issues in today's debate. Before that, we'll have a report.
The United States has begun to pull out its equipment and not troops from Syria less than a month after President Donald Trump said it would withdraw from the Arab country. Trump has stressed that the withdrawal will be gradual but has not provided any timetable. Trump sent his Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to the Middle East to assure his allies of Washington's support despite Trump's Syria withdrawal decision. Earlier this week, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton laid out conditions for the pullout, including the defeat of Daesh and guarantees for the safety of Washington's Kurdish allies in Syria. In Cairo, Pompeo painted a chaotic picture of a Middle East and bashed Iran for its woes. He said in his anti-Iran speech that Washington is redoubling its efforts to put pressure on Tehran.
Let's turn to Iran. President Trump has reversed our willful blindness to the danger of the regime and withdrew from the failed nuclear deal with its false promises. The U.S. reimposed sanctions that should never have been lifted. We embarked on a new pressure campaign.
The U.S. State Department says it will host a global summit next month on the Middle East, particularly Iran. Pompeo plans to visit other GCC members, including Saudi Arabia, with the aim of strengthening the organization. Analysts believe that Washington is scared of Iran's growing power in the Middle East.
They also are very worried about Iran's growing industrial and business expansion, which once it fully has peace and it's able to fully develop its nation. So to think that Iran has some goal to destabilize the Mideast and create the chaos that the U.S. is actually doing is ridiculous, because it conflicts with what its long-term plan is to build up its economy and have good relations with all of its neighbors.
Iran has been at the forefront of the fight against Daesh in the region and helped Iraq and Syria defeat extremist militant groups that the U.S. allies have been funding and arming. Pompeo said that America has always been a liberating force, not an occupying power, but many in the region believe Washington's actions in countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria say otherwise.
Now, with that report by Amir Turkashman, let's begin the debate tonight. Joining me will be columnist with The Hill, Brent Podolsky from Washington, D.C., and director of Eurasia Future, Adam Guerra, who's joining us from London. Thank you both gentlemen for joining us in this debate. Now, let me start with Brent Podolsky. In Egypt, Pompeo said that, quote, the age of self-inflicted American shame is over, and so are the policies that produce so much unneeded suffering. America has rediscovered its voice and will now be a force for good in the Middle East. Is this really the case?
Well, I thought his speech sounded almost like a campaign speech criticizing President Obama more than a serious foreign policy about the country. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to find ways to stop these tensions, not to escalate them. We need to find ways for countries to stop killing each other, threatening each other, and attacking each other, and to work together to find common interests. And I will say, by the way, since I am here, there are Americans being held in Iran right now, and I would strongly urge and recommend that they be released. I think that would be an important step forward that hopefully Europe and the United States could reciprocate. But I thought that what Pompeo said, I disagreed with most of it, obviously. He was clinically, repeatedly attacking President Obama, who I supported. And I just think it didn't help. I'd like to see more human rights and less tolerance for autocrats and dictators. I'm not sure with al-Sisi in office that Cairo was the best place to give that kind of a speech. And I just think that everybody involved in all of these disputes all of whom have economic challenges, have to find ways to seek diplomatic and peaceful solutions so everybody benefits in all of these countries, rather than these endless escalations by all of the parties that make life worse for the people in all of their countries.
Okay, of course, Brent, there are also Iranians being held in the U.S. That's a different story we're not dealing with today. All right, let's go to Adam Gary. Adam, Pompeo supported, quote, alliances with Arab autocrats loyal to Washington, and praised Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain for their role in the region. Now, these countries are accused of human rights violations and waging hostile actions against their neighboring countries, including Syria, Yemen, and Qatar. How can you explain this contradiction?
Well, if one wanted to take the time to explain every contradiction that emanates from the mouth of an American politician, then one would die of old age in the process, and I don't think that this television program is long enough for me to do that. Suffice to say, if a country has economic policies that are pro-US, and if we're talking about an Arab country, if they like Israel, either publicly or privately, then everything is just swell. If the opposite of those two things true, then if someone were to stub their toe and hurt their foot on the way out of a government-run post office and say, Iran, it's a vile regime violating the human rights of the innocent, it's all just a lot of grandstanding. It's bread and circuses for those who haven't moved on to sweets and high-definition television.
All right. Now, Brent, can the U.S. introduce a successful model for bringing democracy and freedom to the region by forming alliances with people like Saudi Crown Prince and his ilk?
No, I don't think that's going to do it. I will, by the way, say for what my colleague said, I hope I don't die of old age in this show trying to explain all the contradictions.
You won.
But no, I am for human rights and against autocrats, wherever they are, whoever they are, whatever they represent. I would like to see the United States take a forceful position in favor of human rights and diplomatic solutions. And yes, there are areas where we should ask and support changes, and that includes Saudi Arabia. That also includes Iran. That also includes, at times, Israel. I mean, I go back to what President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry said about the two-state solution. We'll see how the Israeli election works out and see if that can be revived. But we have to have negotiated diplomatic solutions. We can't have people attacking, undermining, and scamming each other. I think it's a very dangerous situation. I wish the United States, under Trump and with Pompeo, had taken a more cogent and balanced position. I mean, he may be right about some of those that oppose America, but he's wrong about autocrats who aren't looking out for America's interests, who we shouldn't be that close to, and we should be willing to support truth and justice wherever it may happen and wherever it may lead. And we don't always do that, and I think that's regrettable. But a campaign speech attacking President Obama was not a diplomatic or strategic analysis. It was a campaign speech attacking President Obama that didn't appear to me to have any solutions for anybody, including the United States.
Now let's go to London. Adam, Pompeo says that the U.S. Condemned Saddam Hussein's gassing of the Kurdish people. But as Saddam Hussein was gassing his own people and Iranians alike, the Reagan administration in December 1983 sent its special envoy, Donald Rumsfeld, to meet with the Iraqi dictator and support him in his war against Iran. Now back in the 1980s, the U.S. did nothing to stop the Iraqi dictator developing weapons of mass destruction, even though they knew that Saddam Hussein was using chemical weapons almost on a daily basis against Iran. Now, what about this contradiction?
And you can add something to that. At the tail end of that war, the U.S. Added insult to injury by downing an Iranian jetliner filled with civilians, all of them killed. And far from apologizing for it, George H.W. Bush gloried in the fact that he wasn't going to apologize for it. So when it comes to the U.S. provoking Iran, committing hostilities towards Iran, using acts of war known as sanctions to try to break the back of Iran, it really is quite disgusting and alarming, to say the least. And I will just say, in keeping with the wonderful chorus of human rights support that we've heard on this show, the best way to support human rights is to support their right to prosperity. And the best way to ensure that they have the right to prosperity is to tear down the walls of sanctions and of tariffs and of the military-industrial complex, and let countries trade with one another, let them speak with one another about territorial disputes or about energy disputes. And guess what? The U.S. is so far from Iran that territorial disputes and energy disputes don't exist. Let the U.S. and Iran trade together. And if that were to happen, you would see a lot of the ghosts of the past fade away sooner rather than later. That's the way to ease U.S.-Iran tensions. Free trade, not a free pass to the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to Washington, D.C. Brent, I'm going to give you a memory test. Are you ready for that? I'm going to read some remarks. Yeah. Whose are they? Now, listen. The Turks, the Saudis, the Emiratis, etc., what are they doing? They were so determined to take down Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and essentially have a proxy Sunni-Shiite war. What did they do? They poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of thousands of tons of weapons into anyone who would fight against Assad. Now, these policies ended up helping militants linked to Al-Qaeda and ultimately ISIS. Who do you think made these remarks?
Oh, it could be a lot of people. We don't have enough time to guess. Who was it?
Well, it's former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden. He made these comments in 2014 to Harvard University students. Now, how do you see the role of the U.S. allies in fomenting extremism and chaos in the region?
Well, I think that what has happened too often is governments that we may not like, that are nominal allies, can be as big a part of the problem as governments that we don't like, who we consider enemies, sometimes with reason, sometimes not. I think we've seen many cases over the years where terrorists are created by policies that are designed or pretending to stop them. Again, I do agree with what my colleague said. We want to have a region, and should stand for a region, we meaning the United States and like countries, where people's lives get better, where there is trade, where there are jobs, where there is hope, where there is an opportunity for people, their families, their kids, their wives, their husbands, to build a better life for themselves and their country. I've been saying that for years, and I disapprove of all of these sectarian wars by all of these parties that do it. And I think most people in the Middle East of all persuasions would agree with that. We need to find ways not to kill each other, attack each other, and destroy each other, and I include all countries in that, and a way to make life better for the people of all of those countries who deserve better than what they're getting better from the politicians of most of those countries.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, Adam, how do you see the role of the U.S. Allies in fomenting extremism and chaos in this part of the world?
Well, I agree with everything that the gentleman opposite said, but if one wants that peace and brotherhood and the rest of Schiller's poem from the ninth movement of Beethoven's, from the fourth movement of Beethoven's ninth, then one way to accomplish it is certainly not by supporting Barack Obama, who leashed more religious extremism across the Middle East than any U.S. president in modern history. And there's some stiff competition. It was under Obama that this so-called Arab Spring turned into the Daesh winter, and we're still, as a planet, not recovered from that yet. The best thing to do is live and let live, a laissez-faire approach to diplomacy that understands and accepts the real differences between political traditions and cultural traditions and religious traditions. It's not the U.S.'s job to tell the rest of the world how to live as nations and as people. And yes, the U.S. is very wealthy. No one's challenging that. Yes, the U.S. has a very powerful military. No one's challenging that. Thank God, it would bring the world to an end. But China is also a very wealthy country. In fact, it is a richer country in terms of purchasing power parity than the U.S. and has been for a good number of years, since 2014, I believe. China's also got a very strong military. But you don't see China going to other countries saying that we want you to change your government. We're going to sanction you if you don't change your government. We're going to sanction you if you trade with a government that we don't like, even though we don't mind your government. So it's not just a matter that power makes one behave this way, because China's rich, China's militarily powerful, but China doesn't force other countries to do as we say, not as we do, under the force of acts of war, and I would include sanctions under that. So if we're all in the mood to learn a bit from each other before we sing Kumbaya, I think we should read a little bit of Xi Jinping thought. The world, and the United States leadership in particular, could learn a lot from it, maybe even how to run its own government without it shutting down.
Well, I think Brent looks like he's going to react to your comments regarding China, Brent.
Well, I think China is a threat. China is also a great power, and there needs to be a way to work together with them and to coexist economically and militarily. And I hope we find a better way than China and the U.S. have found. Now, I do want to say that President Obama, when he supported the two-state solution in Israel, driven largely by Secretary of State at the time, John Kerry, offered a major contribution to the region and I think offered a major opportunity. I wish we had more time to talk about the Arab Spring. I had strong opinions about that. I hope people who are interested can Google my name and Arab Spring and do a search and you'll see what I've written about it. I wanted a far more visionary and bold response by the United States. At one point wrote, we are all Egyptians, when Mubarak fell. I think we did not respond strongly enough with enough generosity and with enough vision. And on that, I would fault Obama, not for being too militaristic, but for not being visionary enough when that moment came. That was a golden moment that I deeply and will always regret that didn't come out better than it did. No doubt about that.
Now let's go to Adam Gary in London. Adam, Pompeo has said that Trump's administration has learned that when America retreats, chaos often follows. That's an exact direct quotation from him. Now Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, has reacted to the comment and said that whenever or wherever the U.S. interferes, chaos, repression, and resentment follow. Have the wars by the U.S. and its allies brought peace to Afghanistan, Yemen, and Syria?
Well, wars by definition don't bring peace. A war is something that happens when peace has broken down. So the very notion that's being asserted is a logical fallacy. Specifically, though, every U.S. intervention in the Middle East has made a bad thing worse. And in some cases, it's made a pretty okay thing very bad. So that's the reality. I know that Mike Pompeo the other week was talking about the end of the world and apocalypticism, but it seems that like some sort of chameleon, he's metamorphosed from the world's worst manic preacher into the world's worst comedian, because what he said is just a joke.
Right. Brent, do you want to comment on that?
Well, when Pompeo said that retreat by the United States is bad, there are many people, serious people in America, are asking whether he was speaking for President Trump or not. One of the criticisms that some have in the United States about Trump, and I'm one of them, is that he is retreating, he is withdrawing. He does make this America First argument again and again. And I'm not sure, and I mean this objectively, and many Americans in foreign policy and security agree with this, I'm not sure that Pompeo, when he talked about retreat, was speaking for Trump or not. And I think we're going to find in the next few weeks and months whether that's true or not. I don't know the answer to that. And that is unfortunate.
Adam, Pompeo has not mentioned human rights violations in Egypt under President Sisi. He did not mention the Israeli violations and atrocities on occupied Palestinian land. He has talked about everything except some issues like these. Why?
Well, because Israel and Egypt are American allies.
Well, as simple as that, very to the point answer. Okay. Brian, do you want to comment on that?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to disagree. I would take a much more forceful position about violations of human rights in Egypt, definitely. I regret that we haven't done it, and Saudi Arabia, but also in Iran, also in Syria. I think if you're for human rights, you have to be for them everywhere.
Okay, and one question for both of you, and please answer me briefly. What do you think of the Trump administration's foreign policy? How will it act, and will it work in this part of the world? I mean, will Pompeo be able to do what he's trying to do during this Middle Eastern trip to nine nations? Brent first.
No,
Why not?
You need a vision that people can relate to, that can appeal to people, not just lecture people about platitudes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Adam?
Well, I think that it's failed before it's begun. I'm a proponent of Arab unity. I think it would create peace, stability, and prosperity across one of the world's most important regions. But look, Nasser couldn't unite the Arabs. The Baathists couldn't unite the Arabs. Gaddafi couldn't unite the Arabs. The religious factions, both moderate and extreme, could not unite the Arabs. And a government that cannot unite Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi is going to unite the Arabs from Morocco to the Persian Gulf. I mean, it's totally laughable. You can't even unite the GCC with its wayward member Qatar. It's really quite laughable, not least because Trump isn't even enthusiastic about the original NATO, the one linking the both sides of the Atlantic from Europe to North America. So in that sense, it's failed. But I think the real mission of Pompeo's visits to the Arab world, to the states of the Arab world, some of them anyway, I think it's to do damage control from what John Bolton did the other week. Were Pompeo sort of the great balancer between Bolton, who is sort of Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman at large, and Donald Trump, who, while a good friend of Netanyahu, and while his family's a good friend of Netanyahu, who he does have some disagreements in that he thinks that some of the troops should indeed be pulled out. And I do have reason to believe that for various reasons in his own mind, he wants that. Okay. So Pompeo was doing damage control. He wasn't coming there from a position of strength.
All right. On that note, we come to the end of this debate. Let me thank our guests who joined us. We had columnist with the Hill, Brent Podolsky from Washington, D.C., and also director of Eurasia Future, Adam Gary, who joined us out of London. Thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.